The next case on for oral argument is State of Minnesota v. Thompson. We are a few minutes early, but if counsel for both parties are present, if you could approach the podium and speak so we could find out whether or not, in fact, everyone is technologically connected.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Gina Schultz here representing Mr. Thompson.
Thank you, and on behalf of the State of Minnesota.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is River Tila on behalf of the State of Minnesota.
Thank you. Thank you to both. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 for appellant's counsel if you'd like to use that time for rebuttal. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument, and you may proceed whenever you are ready, counsel for appellant.
Where the parties agree today. The parties generally agree on the facts. It appears that the parties generally agree on the definition of fictitious and that the statute is unambiguous.
You said you believe the parties agree on the definition of fictitious? I thought that was the dispute.
Well, Your Honor, from my read of the respondent's brief, it looks like the respondent is applying the definition that we suggested. But the disagreement is that respondent says this was a fabricated name. It was only fabricated from the pieces of his room.
So let me ask you a question on your dictionary definition. You interpret the word fictitious from the dictionary. How does that interpretation, your concocted or made up, square with the rest of the sentence in the statute? Whoever, with the intent to obstruct justice, gives a fictitious name other than a nickname, and then that sets out the violation of law. How does your definition square with the caveat other than a nickname?
Well, Your Honor, I think that in many cases nicknames would count as a fictitious name. And to me,
I'm sorry, you said I didn't. What did you say about? I didn't hear your sentence.
I'm sorry. I think that in many cases, a nickname would be a fictitious name.
In every case. It seems to me in every case a nickname is sort of fictitious because the legislature says other than a nickname. So the legislature seems to construe nicknames as fiction. So whatever the legislature means by fiction, it doesn't seem as if concocted or made up would be the definition the legislature is applying. For example, the name Jack is a nickname for John, Maggie for Margaret, but those aren't fictional in the way that you're describing, and that you're understanding the word to mean.
I guess I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think that is, even if a nickname like Maggie for Margaret is a common usage, I still think it's concocted or fabricated in a way that using your own legal name is not. Simply because it's not based on your own legal name, it came from somewhere else.
When you say your own legal name, your client gave a name that was not on any legal document as your client's legal name. So doesn't that defeat your argument?
I disagree, Your Honor. The name that he gave is indisputably part of his legal name.
Well, it's part of his legal name, but it's not his legal name. I mean, your client expressly testified that the reason he gave the name was so that he wouldn't be found out attached to himself, that his legal name would not be found. So in what way, how are we to define legal name? I thought legal name would be a name on a birth certificate or a Social Security card. In what way was the name that your client gave his legal name?
Well, I think this court does not have to define legal name for the purpose of the statute. It only needs to define fictitious.
Well, for the purpose of your argument, though, since you used the term legal name, I'm trying to understand the difference between fictional and non-fictional. And since you use that as a starting point, let's see if we have a meeting of the mind. In what way was your client's name his legal name? Under what definition or what usage would this be his legal name?
Well, I think there are two reasons. One is that, his full name is listed as the caption of this case. There's really no dispute that it's Dakota James Burton Thompson. And the name that he gave
when you say his full name is listed on the caption, aren't you really saying his legal name is listed on the caption?
Yeah, there's no dispute that is his legal name. That's what he testified to.
So in what context would the partial name that he gave be used as his legal name? In what setting?
Well, it was his testimony that for tribal matters, it is used as his legal name. But that's not really... Our argument isn't that Dakota James Burcham is his full legal name. We've conceded that it's not. The argument is that because it's part of his name, it's not concocted or fabricated in the way that giving, an alias would have been. That if he would have said, my name is Mark Twain or something like that.
Well, John, a shortened form of Jonathan, is a nickname, but it's a shortened form of Jonathan. The legislature treats that as a nickname, as a fictional name, but it accepts it from criminal liability.
I don't think that the statute has to be read as saying that any nickname is fictitious, such as a shortened form of Jonathan for John. I think the legislature, the way I read it, is wanting to make sure that if your name is Margaret and you say my name is Maggie, that you can't be found in violation.
No, I understand that too. But I mean, as far as your understanding as made up name, when the legislature says that if you give a fictitious name other than a nickname, that would seem to imply the legislature treats nicknames as fictional, and they're just accepting them from the statute. I mean, the word, you looked up fictional in American Heritage Dictionary. I looked up other than, and the word other than means besides or with the exception of. So the legislature was saying a fictional name with the exception of a nickname, which would seem to me that the legislature understood nicknames to be fictional, and nicknames generally aren't concocted and made up in the way that you're arguing, it seems to me.
I have a slightly different question, if I could. It seems to me, I understand your argument to be that the legislature hasn't required, but could have easily required, that a person provide their full legal name and date of birth to a police officer upon request in a traffic stop. They could have said that. They didn't. So it can't mean that you have to give your full legal name upon the demand of a police officer. That's your argument, right?
That's my argument.
Here's my problem with our standard of review. At this point, do you agree that the district court properly read the elements of the statute to the jury?
I do, Your Honor.
Okay. And do you agree that our review of the sufficiency of the evidence in the setting we're in now has to assume that the jury found the facts to be consistent with its jury verdict, and we can't assume that that other facts are what they found?
I agree, Your Honor.
In finding him guilty, didn't they necessarily reject his testimony that for tribal matters, appellant's testimony, that is, that they necessarily rejected his testimony that for tribal matters and other things, he goes by this other name?
Well, Your Honor, I guess I have a two-part answer to that. The first is that I don't think it's clear that that's what this court needs to do as part of the standard group review, simply because his testimony doesn't conflict with the state's evidence or conflict with the verdict. The state never contested his testimony, and the state said, sure, even if that was your legal name for
Yeah, I have some questions for the state's attorney along the, for the prosecutor along those lines too. But I understand at this point that his the way I'm understanding what the statute requires, the jury must have found that that isn't a nickname or another name that he uses, because if it thought that, then there would be a reasonable doubt of his guilt under the statute, and they wouldn't have returned the verdict that they did.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's the second part of the inquiry here, because this is a sufficiency case, as Your Honor is pointing out, but when sufficiency cases require this court to construe a statute, that part of the standard review requires is de novo. This court looks at the statute, decides what it means, and then applies it to the facts. And so our argument today is that this court should construe the statute according to its plain meaning, which requires that the name be concocted or fabricated.
But we would apply it to the facts as found by the jury.
Yes, Your Honor, but if this court decided that fictitious means concocted or made up, concocted or fabricated, and an incomplete name is not concocted or fabricated, then this verdict needs to be reversed.
So unless going to Judge Rodenberg's question, if your client gave a name that was shorter than the full name, like John instead of Jonathan, we would treat that as a nickname, wouldn't we?
I believe so.
So in this case, your client gave a name shorter than his full name and testified that that's a name that others accept as his name. Wouldn't that be a nickname then?
I mean, certainly the district court did not think that it was.
The district court didn't say one way or the other whether it was. Wouldn't that be for the jury's determination? If he claimed that this was a name that was used, the jury implicitly, going to Judge Rodenberg's approach to the case, it seems to me the jury may have simply rejected as incredible his unsupported representation that this is a name I go by. In other words, the jury rejected the idea that this was a nickname.
I disagree, Your Honor, and for a couple of reasons. But the first is that this wasn't cited in our briefs because it wasn't immediately relevant to the issues raised. But the district court.
Well, it is relevant. It is relevant to the issues raised if we're determining whether the jury. I mean, your argument is there was insufficient evidence to convict him of the offense, and if you're saying that. There's insufficient evidence because he represented that his name, his partial name, was in effect his nickname. The jury didn't have to accept that. And the jury's conviction of him, if there was no challenge to the instructions and no argument that the instruction should have been more clear in this regard, it seems to me that that would be a basis to affirm too. What's your response to that?
Well, part of the transcript I would like to point, Your Honor, to is the district court explicitly forbade the defense attorney from making an argument that the Coda James version was a nickname. And the defense attorney said, no, that's not the argument that we're going to make. And the judge said, okay, good, because I'm not going to let you. And so certainly the district court did not think that the Coda James version was a nickname. And that was not the theory that the defense raised at trial. What the defense said is, first of all, this is his legal name for tribal matters. And whether this court assumes that the jury disbelieved that testimony, it still was not a fictitious name because it was not fabricated. It's part of his name.
But if the jury rejected the fact that this was his legal name this wasn't really a legal name. It didn't believe him when he said this was my legal name for trial tribal purposes. Then what is it? If it's not his legal name, it's not his legal name for trial purposes, it's not a fictitious name, or it's not a nickname, isn't all that's left that this is a fictitious name?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think if I would have come in here this morning and introduced myself as Gina Danielle's my middle name, it would have been inappropriate and informal and not at all what Your Honor asked me to do when asked me to identify myself on the record, but I don't think I would have given a fictitious name. I think I would have
Well, you have to interpret the statute in the context of the meaning. We're talking about a name being given to a peace officer. So there's a purpose to find. I mean, a peace officer is not asking for the name just for conversational purposes. The peace officer is asking for the name for official police business and state business, and identifying who it is the officer is encountering. So if you give a partial name in that context, it's very different than giving a partial name in the context that you've just described, where you're just trying to identify yourself for the court so we know who we're talking to.
I agree, Your Honor. I've conceded that it is partial, and that's one of the reasons that we're not contesting the third element of the statute, which is that it was done to obstruct justice. I think that's really what's operative here. And that's why the issue is really narrow, and that's whether this name was fictitious.
So give an example of a fictitious name. Give an example of a fictitious name that's not a nickname.
Mark Twain is Samuel Clemens' pen name, which I think is a fictitious name.
Okay, what if your client gave the name Abraham Lincoln?
I think that's either a fictitious name or the name of another for the purposes of Subdivision 2.
Well, Subdivision 2 is only a violation if you give the name and date of birth. So under your theory, if your client would have said, my name is Abraham Lincoln, who is not a fictional character. It's not a fictional name, it's a real name. You're saying no conviction.
I'm saying that I think that it either is a fictional name because it's not someone whose birthday you could give and the police could, in theory, find him in the Minnesota databases.
The birth date doesn't come into effect on Subdivision 1, it's only Subdivision 2. So is it a fictional name or not? Abraham Lincoln, if your client gave that name, was that a fictional name?
I think that would be a fictional name.
Why?
Because it's clearly concocted or fabricated.
Why is it concocted? So concocted means a name that the person doesn't really use as his own name.
I think it means a name that he reached into the air and made up. It's a name that doesn't have anything to do with him. It's a name that's not a shortened version or an incomplete version of his own name. I think it's...
All right.
I think that if you... There's a common sense element to this argument, which is that I think if you ask someone on the street whether Dakota James Burcham is a fictional name versus whether Abraham Lincoln is a fictitious name, I think they would say that Abraham Lincoln is a made-up name.
All right.
Dakota James Burcham.
Well, thank you. You'll have 5 minutes if you want to mull that over a little bit more and come back. You certainly can with your rebuttal argument. Counsel for the state.
The court?
We're ready for you.
I want to add something that prospective counsel spoke about at the very end of her.
Could you remind us of your argument? Could you remind us of your name as you commence your argument?
I apologize, Your Honor. My name is River Thielen, representing the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Thielen.
She mentioned regarding Abraham Lincoln that he is not somebody found in the databases of Minnesota. And that is exactly what we have here with the name given by Mr. Thompson when Deputy Bender stopped the vehicle. He gave the name Dakota James Burcham. He represented that name as his legal name. He represented that name to Deputy Bender in order to avoid being arrested on his warrant.
Let me interject at that point. He used it as his name. I'm not sure that a person. I don't understand that's the full legal name is part of the statute. If the legislature had meant that, they could have easily said, whoever with intent to obstruct justice fails to give his or her full legal name and date of birth to a police officer is guilty of a crime. But they didn't do that.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the fictitious name, the name that falls under the statute, although it's not necessarily, it is built of the pieces of his name, but it is concocted or fabricated as the defense used in their brief, and that it's built of the pieces of his name. That doesn't mean it's any less false or fictitious or any less fabricated. It's just...
Really? My sister got married and hyphenated her last name. And she actually does use both of those names. when you write to their family, you're writing to the Roberts family, and so you call her Mary Roberts. Professionally, when she's acting as an attorney, she calls herself Mary Rodenberg. Is one of those fictitious?
In the eyes of the state of Minnesota, when pulled over by a traffic officer, if used in a way to deceive the officer about your identity, then yes, it could be found by a jury as a fictitious name.
That seems like you're confusing the two elements. One element is giving a fictitious name. The other is with the intent to obstruct justice. And you seem to have folded the fictitious name into the with the intent to obstruct justice element. Aren't those separate elements the state must prove?
They are separate elements, Your Honor, but I'd highlight for the court that in the definition you provided by defense, fictitious is especially with the intent to deceive or mislead. And that is what is present in this case. He gave, shortened his name. He represented Thompson as his, Bertram as his last name, and James as his middle name. And that is the name he represented to the officer, specifically built out of his component pieces. The jury did hear that testimony about his use of that name, and as this court had mentioned, that is for the jury to decide whether that was a sufficient name to get the officer, and the jury rejected that.
If we were to decide this case in a published opinion and expressly declare what the meaning of fictitious is in this statute, what would we say?
I don't think the statute is ambiguous and that fictitious needs to be defined. I think it's a term that's used in common parlance.
Well, it's disputed in this case as to what it means. So what would we say that it means? Other than just, well, everybody knows what it means. It's a common parlance word.
Well, I think if Your Honor leaves it undefined for the jury to figure out whether a particular representation of a name would fall under the definition of fictitious, I don't think it's a necessarily legal term that juries would need further definition.
Let's assume that we want to define the term. How would we define the term?
I think the definition given by defense is applicable, fabricated or concocted, particularly with the intent to deceive. I don't know if that's the exact quote of the definition given, but it's something to that extent.
Well, the fictitious I'm repeating a question that Judge Ross has already asked, but the fictitious doesn't require one thing or the other as to whether it's intended to deceive. The name I've given you is fictitious doesn't depend on whether I'm trying to deceive you. If I tell you that I'm Joe Smith, that's fictitious, no matter what my intent is, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah. So we can't rely on the definition that Judge Ross is asking for can't rely on the intent to deceive.
Your Honor, one definition this court could apply is simply a name that is not commonly used as one's own. That would be a fictitious name. Abraham Lincoln, in that case, although a true name of an individual, would be a name that would be constituted as fictitious in that circumstance because it is not the name used as one own. In the example given by Your Honor about the individual who used both last names in separate contexts, that again is a name that could be used as one's own, and that would be for the jury to decide, given that definition, whether the person is using that name in a fashion that would constitute a false or fictitious name under the statute. And in this case, the jury did hear the testimony about Mr. Thompson's prior use of his name 11 to 13 years prior for tribal purposes, and they apparently rejected that when they found him guilty.
Is a person obligated under Subdivision 1 to give his or her date of birth?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Is a person even obligated under Subdivision 1 to give a name?
Well, I don't know if that a person is obligated under Minnesota law to give a name. They may be for the purposes of investigating a crime. I'm not sure if a person would if they fail to give a name, what if they'd be chargeable at all?
Well, they haven't, at least on the part of the statute that we're talking about, they haven't given, if they don't say anything, what's your name? Say nothing. They haven't given a fictitious name other than a nickname.
That's correct.
So you don't have to identify yourself to a police officer. That might result in you getting arrested, but you don't have to say those words.
But if you do identify yourself using a fictitious name, Your Honor, then you're in violation of the statute. If you don't identify yourself, the officers could pursue other avenues of identifying you. The officers may choose to do that. That's up to them at the time of the scene. When you fictitious name, though, there's that intent element to obstruct justice, and that's where the statute specifically applies. So this wasn't just a shortened form of his legal name. That's clear when the officer comes back and double checks and says, are you known by any other name? And Mr. Thompson says, no, that's it. It's also not simply a nickname. In this case, when Officer or Deputy Bender first approached the vehicle, Mr. Thompson identifies himself as simply Coda, which would be a good example of a nickname. That's certainly not in violation of the statute. That is like Jim or James, Bill or Thompson. That is the nickname contemplated. But using different parts of your name to essentially mislead an officer is certainly should be contemplated by the statute, and that's why the jury found Mr. Thompson guilty of doing so. The state doesn't necessarily concede I've referenced it a few times, but there's an issue with the definition given by the defense, and that the state does maintain that real names of another, like Abraham Lincoln, would apply, and I think that's evident by the Costello case, where the court conducted a sufficiency analysis and concluded that the real name of a brother was sufficient and fell under the purview of this statute.
Well, that was subdivision 2. Subdivision 2 uses a different term. It doesn't say a fictitious name. Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Costello a subdivision 2 case where the name that was given, a name and date of birth of another person?
I guess my notes may be correct, Your Honor. I have subdivision 1, but that could be an error, and I apologize.
Well, you might be right about that. I could be wrong about the case, too.
I think that's all I have to represent to the court. If there are no further questions, I can yield my time.
I think you're right, by the way. It looks like subdivision 1 was the... was the cited statute in Costello.
Then I just reiterate my argument that it demonstrates that a real name of another person is contemplated by the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you'd like to use it.
Thank you.
And again, your name?
Sorry,
you have to give your non-fictitious name again.
I'm so sorry, Your Honor. This is Gina Schultz again for the appellant.
Thank you.
I just have a couple of quick points to make here on rebuttal. First, I do have State of Costello in front of me, and I want to address respondent's points. I agree with respondent that it is subdivision 1, but our argument here is that issue was not litigated in Costello. The sufficiency section of that opinion is very brief. It's unclear what the parties raised. And my best reading of the statute is that what was challenged was whether Costello gave a false name with intent to obstruct justice. Because this court says, or I'm sorry, the Minnesota Supreme Court says, that there was sufficient evidence from the jury concluding on a reasonable doubt that Casella intended the officer to rely on the false name in violation of subdivision 1. So because the issue wasn't litigated, I don't think Casella was on point here.
Well, it certainly, the word fictitious wasn't used, but the court does say that the testimony constitutes sufficient evidence from which a jury could conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that he intended the officer to rely on the false name. And in that case, it seems as if this court at least implicitly interpreted the term fictitious to mean false. That is not a name that would identify the individual providing the name.
Your Honor, I don't think that issue was raised here. I don't have the party's briefs, but from the opinion, it certainly doesn't look like the Supreme Court engaged in any statutory construction here or said, you know, fictitious means this or that. It looks like the only element that was challenged was the intent to obstruct justice. And because the appellate court's decisions are read in the context of the issues that are raised, I don't think that's fine.
I don't know if you're correct about that. I mean, the court said what it said as to the sufficiency of the evidence, but then it quoted immediately afterwards the both elements, not just the intent element, but quoted both elements of the statute with the intent to obstruct, gives a fictitious name. So it seems to me this case is similar. The testimony was almost identical. In that case, the defendant testified, "I was hoping my brother had a license, so I was thinking my brother's name." That was his response. So tell me if you think this would be an appropriate definition of fictitious. You've got, under the statute, you have to have the intent to mislead element, but you also have, I think, the fictitious. Why wouldn't fictitious be a name that actually misleads, or a name that tends to mislead in the context of its being provided to law enforcement?
I guess I disagree, Your Honor. I think that the dictionary definition is sufficient. I think it works here. I think that, there's...
Well, in the context of the statute... In the context of the statute, wouldn't that be a more likely understanding of what the legislature meant? A name that was intended to mislead violates the statute because of the intent element, but a name that actually effectively does mislead or tends to mislead would be a fictitious name. Wouldn't that fit everybody's understanding of the hypotheticals we've presented with Abraham Lincoln and Maggie and John and Jack?
I guess I disagree, and one of the reasons is that...
Explain why you would disagree within the text of the statute. Looking at the text of the statute, why would you disagree?
From the text of the statute, I think that the legislature knows how to use false name or name of another when it wants to, which it does in subdivision 2. And back when the statute was first enacted in 1987, it did say false or fictitious. And immediately the year after, the legislature amended it to take out the word false or and to add subdivision 2. I think the legislature used the word fictitious. I think it has a plain meaning, and this court can look to the dictionary for the plain meaning. And Mr. Thompson's conduct just does not violate the meaning of the statute. So unless this court has any other questions for me, we ask that this court reverse Mr. Thompson's
I think we're all clear on the questions. Thank you both. Very interesting case. I hope you had as much fun thinking about all the possibilities as we'll have to come up with in writing the analysis. But thank you for your argument, both in writing and orally before the court. We appreciate it. The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. And that's the last case we have on our oral calendar today, so we are in recess.